Good morning and welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I actually had, I had to remember what I was saying in the intro. Like, you could see the wheels turning. My name is Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And I also like it when we start the show with a guest, which tends to work out pretty well. Today we have a special guest starting basketball season. You and I are doing game number 3 already on radio and TV tonight, but it is the Bedford High girls basketball coach, Sue Thomas. Coach, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. So coming into the season, I think Andrew and I were at the game the other night and almost sort of wondering what to expect. The seniors that you lost last year, Mia Roy, Allie Fillion, among others, and it was a big group of them, but everyone in the starting five this year was on the team that had a perfect 18-0 regular season. So that helps out as far as the culture goes and kind of passing down traditions. But for you, how smooth has the tradition been this season or in the off season and in the preseason as those returning players are now the leaders in the program?
Well, for the, it's great to have 5 returning players. Only Lizzie Stevenson started the entire season last year, but they all got pretty good playing time. But the one thing I did tell the team, the returning players, at the end of last season was to not try to replicate what we had last season. And I'm not just talking about an 18-0 season, but it was just a really special group of kids, all 12 players, just the way they got along. We had 6 seniors who, you know, really kind of led the way, but it was a very tight group. And when half the group leaves, you don't really know what's going to happen. But so far, it's been really good. The 5 returning players, especially our 2 captains, Lizzie Stevenson and Kendi Barnard, have kind of picked it up. We have a very young team. I have 3 freshmen on my team this year. So we're still trying to come together and figure out exactly who we are. But it's a work in progress, but it's a good one.
Yeah, Coach, we enjoyed the first look at that new group. In the season opener last Friday, it was against Manchester Memorial, a game the Bulldogs won 59-47. How did the girls' performance that night compare to your expectations for the first game of the season?
They actually exceeded our expectations. We wanted to win. We went in, I guess, expecting to win is not the right word because Memorial always puts a good, especially lately. Greg has done a great job with that team. We knew it was going to be tough. What I didn't know is how would the younger kids handle varsity basketball? It's a lot quicker and a lot more physical than they realize until they get on the floor. And although it wasn't necessarily a very pretty game, it was both teams played hard, and we didn't quit. I was worried at halftime that, you know, with all the adrenaline in the first half that we would let down and let them back in the game, but that didn't really happen. And, you know, we have to work on our offense. We're still trying to get that to come together, but the defensive effort was great. And I was really happy with the whole game.
Joined by Bedford High girls basketball coach, Sue Thomas. And Coach, you alluded to it. You had 3 freshmen out there who were in the game and out of the game. The difficulty for them and for those who might not have played a sport in front of crowds before is you're sort of jumping in really into the water quickly, and you could see there were some jitters off the bat, but people tended to get acclimated very quickly.
Yeah, the freshmen did a great job. I don't know if they realized first when they first found out they were on varsity. I think that all 3 of them were surprised, but then when they were some of the first kids off the bench, you know, they handled it great. I mean, we put in Sydney Suazo as the backup point guard, and she's not, I don't think she's really a point guard, you know, per se, but she handled it. She did a great job. She's very quiet off the court, but she got on the court and just did her thing. And really all the kids that went in, saw that. I was able to get all 12 players in because I thought it was important for them just to get a taste of basketball.
Right, and you could tell with Sydney, too, that even though what you're saying, she wasn't terribly familiar with playing that point guard role, she assumed it well. I mean, she handled the ball confidently getting up the court, and in the instances in that game, and Andrew will touch on Allie Morgan in a second, but in that game, when Allie hit a little bit of foul trouble, you really didn't have a choice. You don't want to foul out one of your leaders early in that game simply because you have nobody else who can bring it up.
Right. Lizzie can do a good job at the point, but I hesitate putting her there because her job is really to find open shots and be a shooter. And in that game specifically, she had the hardest defensive role. So putting her, you know, then having to play point guard would be tough. And that's the one thing, we don't quite yet have a pure backup point guard. We have a couple of girls that will be able to handle it. Marina Braga, who's a sophomore, she can play the point, but they need time. And just based on what we saw at practice, it was just like, all right, Sydney, go. And she handled it great. She did a great job.
Yeah, she really did. And of course, she first came in when Allie had those first two fouls.
Right. We had to take Allie out because the last thing I needed, like you said, was for Allie to foul out early.
Right. Well, when Allie came back in the game for the rest of the night, she really was playing just excellent ball. She ended up scoring a team-high 15 points and making 3 three-pointers. And she also looked very comfortable and confident as she was doing it. What is it about her that allows her to play that way in only the first game of her junior season?
She's really ready. I think if she went to most other schools in the state, she would have been the starting point guard before now. But, you know, playing behind Mia Roy, who just brought like this passion, this thing to the game that's hard to describe, you know, made her just take a back seat to Mia. But Allie also did get a lot of playing time at the point last year. So this year she's just ready. And you could, like, she's been chomping at the bit for this. So she was not going to, you know, falter at all. And she is, you know, sometimes it's just like we almost have to calm her down. She's so ready. When she had the two fouls on her, she's like, Coach, can I go back in the game? I'm like, not in this quarter. You're not going back in. And she was frustrated, but, I mean, she understood it. But, you know, then when she went back in, I think she settled down a little bit. It was also, for her, she's been looking forward so much. She's known all summer that she was going to be the point guard that, you know, you get out there the first time, you're a little too aggressive, but that's easy. It's easier to calm someone down. And, you know, so then, like you said, she went back in the game and was great.
Yeah, she definitely looked ready to take the reins. Now, down in the post, Kendi Barnard and Amanda Jonas had strong performances on both ends of the court. How important will they be to your success this season? And will it be a focus for you to try to have at least one of them on the court at all times?
Yeah, that's the plan. At least one of them needs to be in the game. The two of them they've always been good players, but over the summer, I think they just went to the next level. You know, Kendi knows where she's playing next year. She's going to play at Roger Williams. I think in a sense, she's a little more relaxed. She was on the volleyball team that went to the state championship game and played a lot. I mean, she was a very key player for that team. So I think that all those things just got her ready to go. And then Amanda's game is just, Amanda used to foul too much mostly because of her movement and footwork. And now she's just a solid player. They can both shoot from the outside too. So the plan is to have at least one of them on the court all the time. And then we have another freshman, Catherine Penick, who I always get a little nervous with freshman post players because they're really not used to what goes on in the key. But she's stepped in and she's held her own to be able to give them a rest. You know, the first game against Memorial, she really just went in minutes at a time to give Kendi or Amanda a rest. And then in the South game, she played a lot more.
Yeah, she did look comfortable and skilled enough to not just play in the post, but also to help facilitate for you on the perimeter. So it'd be fun to see her grow.
So, I mean, she's just, we do need to keep Amanda and Kendi on the floor as much as possible, but having Catherine to just give them a break here and there is great. And, you know, she's only a freshman. She's just going to get stronger.
Absolutely. So we're joined here by Coach Sue Thomas of the Bedford Girls varsity basketball team. And, Coach, we saw that during the preseason you were quoted commenting on the toughness of this year's team. What have you been doing to help foster that toughness?
We do a lot of drills at practice that foster toughness, and they've bought into them. I think we do a whole series of what we call toughness drills because we found we needed to start doing that. Playing for Bedford is great in that we have a good winning culture. Playing for Bedford is hard because every other team plays their best game against us. You know, everyone wants to beat us, which is great. So we have to really do more at practice, but they've all bought in. This group actually likes being physical. Almost, you know, so it's a little different than other teams I've had in the past that have been more pure basketball players. This group isn't afraid to, you know, bang it up, which tonight we're going to need, I'll tell you that. So
looks like it's going to be a tough one tonight. It's BG for those who do not know, and I guess for those who do not know, we're recording the show on Friday, and the game takes place on Saturday. But it will be a tough one. It's always a tough one when you face off against BG. And in thinking about it, as I struggle to find my questions again, this is brilliant. Tonight, third game of the season at BG, what do you think the keys to the game will be? Of course, they have a very experienced team, and it seems like they just sort of rebuild every year. How do you, in game number three of the season, compete with that?
Oh, it's going to be hard. For this year, for them, they didn't rebuild. They just kept going, just like us last year where we had pretty much the same team as the year before. BG has pretty much the same team. They lost one key player for them, but they filled in fine. The key tonight is taking care of the basketball. BG is extremely tough. They all go for the ball. They read the plays very well. They jump into passes. That's all we've been working on the last 2 days is taking care of the basketball, finding the open player, going to the ball, taking care of the ball, and then getting back on defense. This game is going to be tough for my team. I'm not comfortable with the team yet going into it, but at the same time, you know, it's only the third game of the season. So I think we're going to learn a lot about our team, about what we still need to work on, about what's going well, and, you know, hope for the best. But, you know, if we don't come out on top, we will take what we've learned and build on it because I have a lot of confidence in my team. It's just we are still young and playing an experienced team this early in the season is going to be very tough.
Right. It's always a challenge, particularly when you've rebuilt, as it were, even though it's with players who you're experienced with and they're experienced with you. It's difficult if they haven't really played significant minutes in a game like that. And at least now, game three of the season, you can build on it. And you can, if you come out on top, great. But there are always going to be things, particularly against a team like BG, that you can focus on to continue to improve, win, lose, or draw.
Absolutely. You know, we went undefeated in the regular season last year. That was not our goal. Being undefeated is never our goal. We are going into the game tonight to win the game. But as long as we take something out of it, learn to build on it, get everyone a lot more experience in really tough battles, that could be just as good as winning, to be honest with you. I know it sounds silly, but in the regular season, I think, you know, it's more important to keep growing than to just win games.
I couldn't agree with you more. So, spoken like a true coach. Sue Thomas, coach of the Bedford High girls basketball team, thank you for the time, and we'll see you out on the court soon.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. We will take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and I guess it's the basketball show. We had the football show a few weeks ago, the show of champions. Today, we just had Sue Thomas, the girls' basketball coach. Now we have Mark Elmendorf, who is the boys' basketball coach. So, Coach, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, thank you for joining us, and thank you for allowing us to be a part of the season, too. You graduated 7 seniors last year, and that group was a group that really accounted for a lot of offense, rebounds, assists. They were the ones that filled up the stat sheet for you. What has been the process in getting basically an entirely new group of players ready to lead this season?
It's been interesting, and you're right. We did we graduated a huge, huge portion of our team, all just wonderful young men who have gone on and are doing well in college and all that. But you know, we had a busy fall season. You know, even though we graduated so many people, we did have you know, several returning players on the varsity, and then we had a very good JV team who, you know, played well last year. So they've all stepped up, and you know, we're moving on. It's been nice. I know that one of the other things people ask me all the time is, you know, we have a significant amount of football players that are playing. They've added a tremendous amount of leadership after such a successful season, and that's been really helpful as well.
It's interesting that you mention it too. You mentioned the football players, and we said something about it on the air the other night. Thomas Morgan looked comfortable, and he didn't really, at least we didn't see him have any varsity minutes last year. I know he was playing JV, but it's almost as if the action on the football field really prepared him to be one of the leaders going into this season.
And that's 100% correct. Thomas has been such a pleasant surprise. He was a junior on the JV team last year, which was unusual. I don't normally do that, but because of the amount of seniors we had, I thought that was the best place for him to get, you know, a significant amount of minutes playing, and that helped him. He had a great summer with us, where he showed that, you know, even though football is probably his number one sport, basketball was still important to him, and he played a lot with us, and even though he was busy with the football. But Thomas has been huge for us. He's shown great leadership. His play has been great. You know, I don't know what he had, 21 the other night, 20 or 21. But he's been great. Tremendous, tremendous surprise. So I've been thrilled with that.
Yeah, it was fun to see him lead the way there in that season opener on Tuesday that we enjoyed calling here on Bedford 105.1 against Nashua South. And the entire starting five was all new from last year. Along with Thomas Morgan, you had Timothy Green, Harry Leguyon, Zachary Guerin, and Justin O'Neill out there. What did you think of their first performance as a group, as a starting five?
Yeah, I think they did great. You know, it's funny. You know, we talked about Thomas, but Timmy Green is, you know, the brother of a former player, Liam Green, who was, you know, so instrumental in some things we did. Timmy's a really good perimeter shooter, a very, very good defender, a very, very good athlete. You know, Harry Leguyon is a godsend. He's a linebacker on the football team, but he's our power forward and our quote-unquote leader on the team. He had the most returning experience, so he's been great. And he'll be the first one to tell you he did not have a great game Tuesday, so we expect him to certainly play better in the future. Zach Guerin is a senior who is out for basketball for the first time. Tremendous athlete, big kid, strong. He played great, 10 points. I don't know how many rebounds, but played really well. And then Justin O'Neill is a junior, and he is clearly our most skilled player. 6'7", handles the ball well, shoots from the perimeter. He's a special player. He's really good. So I think he played the entire game, all 32 minutes. But I thought they played great, and I certainly think they're going to get better as well.
I want to go back to something in there that you mentioned and almost kind of got buried in the conversation. Zach Guerin hasn't played at all, 4 years.
Never.
But, he has great instincts. I mean, you watch him on the court, his positioning is good. He seals off real well, boxes out real well, creates space with his body. So, I mean, he doesn't look like he's never played.
Well, he's never played for us. He's been here at BHS for 4 years. He's played in the Bitty League, and he's played, you know, in the summer with different things. But he's a kid who's a serious football player. And he's worked out 365 days a year to become a great football player, and he's very, very good. But football's over, and he said, you know, I'm going to play basketball now. So I was thrilled that he came out. And I actually had to talk to him several times before the season. But he's been a godsend, and he's just a wonderful young man who works his tail off. He's been fun, really fun to coach. Very coachable young man.
That's an amazing free agent pickup right there.
Yeah, seriously.
You're not kidding. And what's going to be fun is, you know, we're going to go into opposing gyms this year, and nobody knows Zach Guerin. And it'll get out quick, but he's going to help us tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got to know Harry Leguillon last year as sort of the guy who would do all the dirty work, get the rebounds, get offensive rebounds and putbacks. But now to have two guys in the paint who are going to do that, I mean, that's going to give you us.
And then the third guy is Justin O'Neal, who's taller than both of them at 6'7", but can do the other things on the perimeter that Zach and Harry can't. So that helps us.
Yeah, that's going to give you quite a front line.
That's
and
fun.
You know, we noticed Justin O'Neal, he's obviously been working on his skills over the summer, but he also has grown. He was listed at 6'4 last year. Now he's listed at 6'7".
And I think he's actually closer to 6'8".
Okay.
He's a big kid. He's a basketball player 365 days a year. That's the only sport he plays. He's a kid that can play at the next level, I think. He's a great, great kid who works hard. He's one of our captains as only a junior. Just a tremendous young man.
So in that season opener, the team really seemed poised down the stretch. In the third quarter, you had to overcome them making 6 3-pointers, I think it was, and you held on to win 65-63 against a team that just would not go away. How much confidence is your group going to take from that first win?
You know, it's a good question. I was disappointed in our perimeter defense that we gave up 9 threes in that game. We cannot do that in the future and win. But we fought back, or I don't know if we ever lost the lead. But, you know, I think we had it up around 10 a couple times, and then they whittled it down. And I think the kids did show tremendous, tremendous poise. You know, Thomas Borgen handled the ball well. As a team, we only made 10 turnovers in that game, which is pretty good for a first game. So I was pleased with that. I thought we shot better than I was not expecting to shoot as well as we did, because that, I don't think, is one of our strengths. But Thomas was 7 for 12 from the floor, and I think that helped the percentage. But it's a good group of kids who, and this is what I tell everybody, they know how to compete. They get after it, and that's, for a coach, that's pretty much all you can ask for.
Right. That's one of the most critical things for you. The team heading into things, of course, you've hit on a number of different players that we have on this roster. Justin O'Neal, a big one, bringing the ball up the court. They seem poised, too. It wasn't as if you were dealing with a callow team. It seemed like these guys had been there before and were nice and settled by it.
Well, and you're correct. And the nice thing that you brought up was, you know, Justin O'Neal bringing the ball up the court. We have a huge advantage with Justin because he does handle the ball so well. Justin right now for opposing teams is going to be a nightmare, mismatch nightmare. You know, at 6'7", who can handle the ball and play on the perimeter like he does, that gives us a huge advantage. And he's not going to turn the ball over, certainly not significantly. That really helps us as a team. So I'm hoping that will, you know, allow us to calm down in pressure situations and things like that. That's a huge advantage for us.
Do you think he's done growing?
No, not even close.
Seriously?
No. Oh, no. He's absolutely got a couple more inches in him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's a very young junior. No, he's nowhere near done growing.
That one play that stands out to me from that first game was when he was going along the baseline and he had his back to the baseline. He made that acrobatic layup.
Right.
Managed to.
Yeah.
When you have long arms like that, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to have that skill to do it is another thing.
Yeah. He can play way above the rim. I mean, he's gonna. There's gonna be several highlight films this year with Justin. He's a good player. He's a really good player.
So for the Bedford High basketball team, and of course we're joined by Dave Elmendorf, or Mark Elmendorf. Why am I tripping over my words
now? You think
of
Dave Schmidt.
Dave Schmidt, maybe.
Tenu football.
You think I would know better at this point. Your second game's tonight against BG, and then you're playing a couple games a week. What are you focused on in the first part of the season to try to get the team to continue to improve, particularly, and I know we've hit on some of it with some of the raw players, but to try to get some of these guys to reach their potential?
Well, that's the goal, is to just get better every game. BG is going to be a huge game for us tonight. They're certainly ahead of us in the preseason type stuff. They're going to come out and they're going to play really, really hard. I'm glad it's at home. They're a big team. But I think the thing that people forget, we had, you know, 9 solid kids play the other night, which at the varsity level is a good number. 4 kids came in and off the bench: Jordan Dyer, Connor Butts, Trey Ravenel, and JT DeLacy, who all, you know, may not have scored a bunch of points or anything, but they came in and the team didn't, the level of play did not drop. So that was a huge thing for us. It allows us to get a little bit of a rotation going substitution-wise. Kids can get a rest. You know, Zach Aaron, for instance, certainly needed a rest in that game a couple times. Same thing with Harry. But, you know, we just have a goal of every day we go to practice, we work hard, we try to get better, we're prepared, and we leave it all on the court.
That was certainly clear the other night, and I'm glad you cleared up something. We kept calling him Richard Ravenel, but
apparently he's Trey.
We now know he's Trey.
Well, he's Trey. His real name is Richard, but everybody calls him Trey. I'll tell you, Trey's been great. He'll be the first big guy off the bench, and he's good. He's been a pleasant surprise, and a tremendous attitude. So it's been good to work with him.
Yeah, that also reminds me, we joked during the broadcast on Tuesday that as that lefty, kind of lanky, floppy brown hair, he reminded me a little bit of Nick Mokas, who was there watching.
There you go, yeah.
How was it to have a lot of those guys from last year, the seniors, back to support you in game one?
You know, this is my 4th year, and I tell people all the time I'm blessed to coach here. The quality of the kid that plays here is just unbelievable, and to see all those kids come back, you know, Nick Mokas was a special young man who's doing great up at UNH. Chris and Steve Chartier were there. They're up at UNH. Max is coming tonight. He's at Fordham. Just great, great, great kids who I just love to death. I mean, just wonderful, wonderful people.
It's obvious the feeling's mutual. They're coming back to see you as well. Well, Coach Elmendorf, we appreciate the time, and know you have a busy rest of the day, and we'll see you tonight for the game against BG.
All right, great. Thanks.
Wonderful.
I appreciate your help and your support.
Hey, thank you. And
our pleasure.
And we appreciate it too. So that was Coach Mark Elmendorf of the Bedford High boys basketball team. We'll take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we're going to go no guests for the remaining 31 minutes. I think we'll be okay.
I think we'll make it.
Yeah, we'll survive. So all we do this time of year is watch basketball, it feels like, although I do watch bowls, but I inevitably forget to turn the bowl on until it's late, and then usually it's a blowout in the Cherry Bundy, Boca Raton,
Gasparilla
Weed Eater Independence something bowl.
Classic.
Yeah. I mean, really, that's the kind of thing, like, if my team was playing in that, I would be on the first plane to Boca Raton to see if I could get all my gear for the bowl. Do people actually buy that?
I think they must.
Does anybody care? Okay. Because I don't. But basketball, which we're watching a lot of these days, Hansen and I have a slight difference of opinion about the NBA now, although it has been a good year, and I will also say I do think among all of the leagues, the NBA has done the best job of allowing their players to have personalities and a voice and market themselves without taking away from anything that is the product. Like they, it's almost this really perfect marketing machine. But we're talking about not a game.
Practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit
about... I miss him too, by the way.
We're going to talk a little bit about practice and what teams are doing now that is behind the scenes with the way the game has changed on the court. And, of course, what has changed is the amount of three-point shots has been skyrocketing. The scoring levels are up at an all-time high. And the game has changed visually because there's so much of an emphasis on spacing and creating open three-pointers that the analysts have realized are so much more valuable than a mid-range two, that teams more and more have adopted that as their primary strategy. And Houston is right at the forefront of that, and we're going to get to them in a few minutes. But what jumped out at me was an article that came out on Tuesday on ESPN about this imaginary four-point line that a number of teams have put on their practice courts. Brooklyn was apparently the first team to do it. The 76ers, the Bulls, the Hawks have followed suit. And what they do is they put a line that's about 5 feet outside the three-point line. And in the NBA at the top of the key, that's 23.75 feet. So we're talking almost 29 feet out. The teams will put a four-point line down. And what they're doing is they're trying to create and foster excellent spacing. And, you know, some players like Trae Young, your buddy on Atlanta, he will actually shoot those shots. And, you know, one of the features in this article was talking about how he had made a shot against the Lakers that looked like it was behind the imaginary four-point line, and then he pointed at the floor. And so it's obviously getting wired into these guys' brains of where they are on the court and how much of an advantage it gives them if they start their offense out at that spot and have the ability to shoot from that range,
right?
You know, because not only if you can shoot from that far away, does that help space the court, but it also helps space the court for the guys who are in the paint,
right?
You know, it opens it up for you know, the pick and roll down the lane or the alley oop down the lane, and it just puts all kinds of pressure on the defenses.
Well, I mean, and it really spaces things out. It has changed the game, and I guess one thing that you played at a far higher level than I ever did and have played way more than I ever have and watched more than I ever will, but one thing that I've realized from the years of playing in the men's league is, particularly sometimes if you're playing at like a McKelvey, if you don't have enough room to sort of space out the floor, things can get really clogged up, and it makes it difficult to free up a shooter for a three-pointer or a nice transition fast break. And in our kind of in our mediocre world, stretching out the floor a little bit, even on a fast break, is a valuable thing because now the wings are open because you can't let the guy who's running to the basket be wide open by himself. The NBA has done that, except they're doing it on a bigger court. And when you're talking about a 94-foot court, and if you have to guard a Trae Young out to 29 feet, now there's one guy up with Trae Young. You look down into the corners, there may be somebody there. If it's Giannis with the Bucks, okay, you have one, but you can't put two up there because what he's doing when he's that far up the court basically is his field of vision is great. He can see all the way down into the corners, and in order to make it so that you can sort of take something away from him, you have to get up closer to him and cut off those angles. And if you can't cut off those angles, well, now Giannis can just eat you alive, basically.
Yeah, Giannis is a great example. Obviously, one of the most unique players to ever play in the NBA, and quickly becoming an MVP candidate, and might be the best player in the game here before we know it. But that was one of the other areas of focus that was in this ESPN article, was what the Bucks were doing with the spacing on the floor. Because in addition to these teams who are making this four-point line, the Bucks have done another thing with their practice court, which is to put five boxes on the court outside the three-point line, one at the top, two on the wings, two in the corners, where they want their players to start the offense when they do this five-out offense where nobody is inside the three-point line. And if you're listening to this show on Saturday, maybe you saw last night when Milwaukee was playing in Boston, maybe you saw this offense and maybe you saw what Giannis was able to do, where this guy who's, what, 6'10", 6'11", if he's at the top of the key and he's one-on-one against a bigger defender who obviously isn't athletic as him, he can eat that guy alive. And then it shows up in the numbers. This season he has 55 unassisted dunks. The next closest in the NBA is Rudy Gobert with 23. So it's just, he's in a league of his own. What he does is he gets that guy on an island at the top of the key, and he just goes to
work. Takes two steps and beats him.
Takes one dribble, two steps, and he's dunking. And to your point
it's
about...
It's not fair.
It's not fair. To your point about trying to slow him down, what can defenses do? Well, if you go to double-team him to try and prevent that unassisted dunk, he's got four shooters set up, two in the wings, two in the corners, ready to catch and shoot.
Right.
And that's a really tough thing to defend.
And he's got good court vision as well. So you know that he's looking at it and he's able to see those four guys, not to mention if they practice, like, because every team in the league practices except for the Bulls because they don't want to practice anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you lose by 50.
We lose by 56.
You're one of the worst teams in the NBA. Why would you need to practice?
No, you don't. It's really, it's not essential. I just want to come and play games and collect my big check.
I mean, let's file a grievance.
We didn't even talk about that.
You can't force us to practice. No. We just lost by 56. What do we need to improve on?
I'm tired from watching the scoreboard operator.
We're all 23 and 24. We got other things we got
to
do.
Exactly. Yeah, I got to do grocery shopping, laundry, go to the gym maybe, flex. So, that completely diverted the entire conversation. The one thing that is, to a degree, bothering me, I know you like the offensive outburst that's going on in the league. I have a problem with it because I think it takes away some of the, I guess you could call it like the sweet science of basketball from back when, the teams from the 80s that were great teams, and I'll put the Celtics in that group, and I'll put the Lakers in that group, and I'll put the late 80s Pistons in that group, were built differently. And I guess the game changes too, and so you have to be mindful of that. I guess, first of all, think about Magic Johnson 29 feet from the hoop driving the lane with guys spaced out. Like, Magic would have had a field day with that. But thinking about those teams, you had your big, and you had...
Everybody had a center.
Everybody had a center, whether it was Tree Rollins or...
Robert Parrish.
Parrish or Kareem or Mike Schmeck. We're really thinking about the Lakers. You had your big center. You had your power forward. So you had a Rambis. Everybody hates him here.
Karl Malone,
Kevin McHale, Rick Mahorn. Like, you had the big guy. Then you had a small forward. But in a lot of cases, like in the case of the Pistons, your small forward wasn't really small. He just wasn't the guy that was throwing elbows down low. In the case of the Lakers, your small forward, for all intents and purposes, was James Worthy, who was bigger than Rambis but played differently. So, but you have these guys that were kind of classical forwards. And a lot of times in the 80s, games were decided down low. Like, you think about, sorry, Celtics fans, you think about Magic with his junior skyhook. He's shooting that among a crowd full of people because everybody's boxing out, sealing off, waiting for the rebound. Now, that wouldn't happen. You'd have four guys outside, Magic goes, and if he makes his hook, he makes it. And if not, well, too bad. It to me... While yes, there is more offense and I like more scoring and I like the up and down, what I miss is the battles down low and the game being decided in the trenches for all intents and purposes. Now the games are decided by who's hotter from the 3-point line because the shot goes up and four guys are going back on defense so they don't get beaten in transition.
Yeah, and of course, what has driven this change that you're talking about is the changes in the rules where you can't hand check anymore. So the ball handlers have a lot easier time getting to the spot on the court where they want to get. And the other thing is the analytics has just become more important and more prevalent. And teams study the numbers and they want to get an edge. And they realize that shooting 35 to 37% from 3-point land is more valuable than shooting 45 to 47% on,
absolutely,
on a mid-range
math.
Two. And the other thing is they realize the corner three, which is only 22 feet away, is the most valuable shot to most teams. And The other thing in this article was
Billy Beane is ruining basketball.
No, he's not. No,
he wrote Moneyball, and now he's ruining basketball.
Well, some might say that, but others are saying, you know, these are the rules, and we're going to try to be the best that we can under this system of rules. And so
I was quoting Joe Morgan.
Yeah, yeah.
Billy Beane wrote Moneyball. Didn't
right,
you know that?
Right, yeah, right, right. So the other thing teams are doing is they are really putting the emphasis on guys realizing that they need to be in the corner, ready to catch and shoot. So the Chicago Bulls, when they do practice, they'll or maybe it was the Hawks, what they'll do is they will award their players 4 points if they make a corner three because they want in a scrimmage because they want their guys to look for that shot. But when you talk about rules changes and this imaginary 4-point line, there has been some talk of at some point in the NBA adding that 3-point line. Apparently the Harlem Globetrotters have done it. They've got their 4-point line at 30 feet out. And apparently there was an independent survey a couple years ago where 72% of fans would be in favor of a 4-point line. What's your take on that sort of monumental change to the rules and to the scoring?
I think they should paint 8 balls on the court like it's a rock and jock basketball challenge and give you 8-point shots if you're just inside the 3-point line. I don't know. It's hard to say that something is that much higher of a value, although the value of a 3 is 50% higher than a 2.
Right.
So I think ultimately it would probably change the game too much for my taste, but I'd still watch it. It is the most fun league out there in terms of the personalities they've created. So I don't know. I like the 3-pointer as it is. But guys have gotten almost too good at shooting it, which has taken things away. Does the 4-point play give you kind of a crazy opportunity? Let's say every announcer is going to have to figure this out because now an 8-point game is a 2-possession game.
Right.
Like you get a 4. If you're fouled on a 4, do you get 4 shots? What kind of a snooze fest is that?
You'd love it. It's funny to hear. I agree with you. I'd rather not see it. I guess I'm a little bit of a traditionalist in, you know, you think about historical records and the fact that guys were able to get as many points as they did with only having the option of getting 1, 2, or 3 at a time. And then, you know, so of course you get guys like Reggie Miller who's firmly against it. And I think it's for that reason because.
But think about it. His 3-point records will remain untouched.
Well,
people will be shooting 4s.
People will be shooting 4s. You're right, but they'll get more career points, and that kind of skews the statistics. But to your point, there are guys who are shooting it, like Damian Lillard, who would be in favor of it. He came out and said that he would. And of course, why not? If he can hit those shots and he's doing it routinely, he might as well get 4 for it instead of 3. But as it is now, we only have a 3-point line, and again, the Houston Rockets are leading the way in this 3-point revolution. And it was this week on Wednesday that they set the new record for 3-pointers in a game. They hit 26 against the Wizards.
And now they look like garbage again because Chris Paul hurt his hamstring.
They're up against a battle without him. He's going to be out for a while.
Wonder what Carmelo's doing.
Yeah, if you need somebody.
Yep, he's available.
But the thing about the Rockets is that they made 26 threes. They only shot 55, only. But the point is they shot 47.3%.
Yeah.
So it would be foolish for them not to shoot all those threes if they can make them at that high of a rate. And that's why, you know, James Harden is just an unbelievable weapon because he shoots a lot of threes, but he makes a lot of threes.
Right. We make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money too. Yes. That was like in the 90s. That was Patrick Ewing.
That was Patrick Ewing.
Yeah. Now at Georgetown. It was good to see him on the sideline too, watching Georgetown a few weeks ago. And you and I have talked about it, and I think we alluded to it the other day during the Bedford High game. I really do love the basketball tournament and how they do it. For me, if you were going to have a wholesale rules change, I don't think you could do better than you have 80 points, there are 3 minutes left in the game, first one to 87 wins. Whoever hits whatever the number is, or whoever hits the number that's decided on taking the leading team and adding 7 points to their number, great. And if you can find a way to incorporate that, that becomes a very fan-friendly thing. I look at how players change and improve, and everything is evolving. And if you look at track, for example, nobody would ever thought that anybody could have run a 9600, but guys can now. And both men and women, the times continue to drop. There was a point when a four-minute mile wasn't something that anybody thought could be done. And
inconceivable.
Now, inconceivable, and it's still an amazing feat. And now it's done with regularity. So humans continue to evolve and improve, and particularly with some of the games. Don't forget, basketball has only been played for, what, 130 years-ish, and in its current form for less than that. So guys are continuing to evolve. Somebody realized, hey, the three-pointer is an undervalued thing, and we need to shoot more of them, and the game has changed. I look at baseball, and players have gotten bigger. Pitchers are throwing harder. The game has
not
changed.
Not so hard that you could get Babe Ruth out consistently, but no, they're throwing harder.
I still think you could, but the game has changed. I do think, though, that if baseball was to look at it and say, okay, this is what the home run is there something else we can do that makes it so that there's an added element of craziness? To me, the home run is the 50 if you're playing skee ball, but you still have those little 100 circles over to the right. Like, what could be in baseball the 100 circle that really makes you get all the tickets and win the stuffed animals?
Well, I mean, when you talk about rules changes and statistics and history, comparing players from different eras, there's nothing like baseball. And everybody who loves the game feels some sort of connection to that idea.
But 15 years ago, it basically broke. Like, all the numbers that mattered went right in the toilet because Barry Bonds is hitting 73 home runs. He has hit 762 home runs. But most people don't know that. Most people still think of Henry Aaron. So it's like,
that's because he cheated.
He did. But like, the numbers broke.
But there wasn't a revolutionary change in the rules that led to that.
No.
And that's what I'm talking about is when you think about a change in the rules that would help baseball, which of course has been lagging in popularity in recent years. You know, I'm not as much of a fan of a drastic change other than the one we've talked about recently, which is like basketball. When you talk about changing the rules at the end of the game, which isn't really going to affect statistics on a large scale, but if you set up this rule in basketball where you shut off the clock with 3 minutes left,
right,
and then, you know, the score is 80-76, first team to 87 wins.
I love that.
So that's a drastic change to the rules, but it doesn't really affect statistics over time. And in baseball, the one we talked about is in extra innings. Like in the minor leagues, what if you adopted that rule where you start the 10th inning with a man on second and nobody out?
Yeah.
That's the type of thing that I think would be fine and exciting. You know, it would improve the game for the fans in a lot of ways, but it wouldn't drastically change statistics.
But do you, I think about hockey, where hockey has gone to shootouts, but in the playoffs, the rules change.
Mm-hmm.
In baseball, it's weird if you suddenly you're starting the 10th inning with a guy on second base and your pitching staff is built to accommodate a game that I'm sure there are statistical probabilities that somebody would look at and say, when a guy's on second base, he scores blank percentage of the time. Therefore, the game statistically will be over within two innings. So there's a benefit to us gambling. And there's a benefit to, okay, I need to move this guy from second to third because I need to get my run or runs. I think about when we were in college playing intramural softball, they had some stupid rule where if you were tied after whatever number of innings, I don't remember what, it became the number of bases that you got in the next inning before you got to three outs rather than runs. So like you would just, or no, it was even dumber than that. It wasn't even three outs. I think it was like you got three batters, the number of bases you got. So you'd hit the ball and just run with no regard for anything. It was like, oh, if I can get to third base, that's three. And then they have to beat me. Like, so you want to make sure that whatever rule you're putting in place at least mimics the regular season well enough so that if in baseball you're starting like that, but in the playoffs that doesn't happen, now you're Nathan Eovaldi's throwing 88 innings in a World Series. But I don't know. It's We completely went sidetracked from the 3 and 4 point play. I think a 4 point play would be fun, and I think it's something that gets more people involved. And I can already see kids in a gym trying to hit a 4 point shot, which to me is fun. Like that, the most fun thing about sports is, and we all still do it. Like you see something on TV and you go, I wonder if I can do that move, or I wonder if I can make that shot. Like we spent hours trying to hit the stupid James Forrest 3-pointer that Georgia Tech hit in 91 or 92 that beat USC. Like we spent hours trying to hit that. That's why you watch sports is, and the kids that go out and play in the yard, the kids are never being themselves. Kids are always being somebody else. So if Steph Curry's draining 4-pointers from 32 feet and kids want to go be in the yard and be Steph Curry and it gets them off the couch and gets them outside, dude, I'm all for that.
Well, yeah, and for me, I'm all for it because I'm all for the concept of if you're practicing a longer shot and you can make a 4-point shot, you're probably going to be pretty good at making the 3-point shot, and you're probably going to be pretty good at making the free throw. And, you know, my biggest gripe with the NBA is guys who can't shoot a free throw, who obviously they just don't take it seriously throughout their entire amateur career. They never get to the line in practice and put in the work because they know this wins and loses games. I got to be able to make free throws. So that's what I think about when I think about guys working on their shooting. Anything that where you work on your shooting, it's a positive thing. The flip side, though, is if you do go to that end of game rule change, like in the TBT that we're talking about, maybe teams don't foul as much. The importance on the free throw goes down even more.
I love that.
You don't like watching free throws down the stretch.
I hate the free throw parade down the stretch where you know the ball's going to get inbounded and the guy's going to go to the line or girl and shoot two. It just like, come on, man.
I don't mind it. I've always liked free throws. And that's the one concern I would have of, okay, if now teams are going to foul less down the stretch because of this new rule, then players are going to put even less of an emphasis on trying to be a good free throw shooter. And they just lose the fundamentals of working on their shooting form.
Well, then the other thing is, what does it do to Vegas where you're setting game totals? Because you're basically setting a game total for
3 minutes left.
3 minutes left, knowing full well that there may be anywhere between 7 and 13 points scored in that last 3 minutes. And it also completely does away with overtime. I haven't actually heard anybody talk about whether they should do that in the NBA outside of us. I just like the idea. And I love the game-winning shot, that every game has a game-winning shot, and theoretically it could be a complete scrub hitting your game-winning shot. But, hey, you got your walk-off. I'm good. So, Tom Lawless. So, speaking of things that we've done in our backyard, Zion Williamson hit his head on the backboard. I hit my head on a Nerf hoop once.
Was it on his block?
It was
shot?
In my bedroom when I was like 12. I don't remember, but he whacked his they had to patch him up. I'm like, not a Duke guy. I think we've established that. I would pay to watch him.
Absolutely.
He's just fun. He's great. That's one of those things that I'm happy that there is a mandatory 1 year because we get to see him play in college for 1 year. However, I wish it was the old days and we could be talking about him as a junior or a senior, you know, and I understand college sports make an absolute ton of money for the NCAA and for the networks and for everything. But just the idea of him in March Madness, and who knows, maybe we get to see it this year.
Well, we'll see him in March Madness.
Yeah,
for sure.
Just it depends how long.
But when you sent that over by email, I wasn't sure which play you're referencing. But what I did see from him this week was Duke was playing Princeton, and he had a blocked shot where I think he made contact with the ball with his hand above the backboard square. It was incredible how high he was up on the glass to make that block.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if he had hit his head on the backboard on that play or not. He was up high enough where he could have
hit his head on the scoreboard, oddly enough.
I mean, he is one of a kind. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's neat. It'll be fun to continue to watch throughout the season. I mean, it's only December. So there's a lot of time left. And the NCAA, too, has done a really good job, at least as far as basketball goes. These teams, because of the length of the season, aren't afraid to schedule anybody. They schedule and they battle test their players, and you wind up with these great matchups that if we see them in March, great, but it at least allows us to kind of daisy chain and figure out, okay, Duke beat so-and-so by this, which, okay, in March, what's going to happen? I don't know.
Although a lot of it at this time of the year are the neutral court tournaments.
Yes.
Like in Hawaii.
Do they go to school?
Do they go to school? Not much. Maybe they study on the plane. But with Duke, the stat they mentioned was they haven't lost at home against a non-conference opponent since St. John's in, I think, 2002?
Yep.
So their schedule at home, I don't think, is really pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, they're not playing Kentucky, you know, at home, you know, early in the season. We're seeing all those games in neutral court, but those are terrific matchups because everybody can get a sense of where they are.
Right.
And those teams change a lot by the time we get to March.
Yes. However, Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns. Duke is always on TV. Duke is ESPN's favorite team, hands down. Last but not least, we have like 3 minutes. You may have seen it. Oh, I know you saw it. I said you as in like the 14 people listening to the show. The Cameron Jordan blast on Ben Roethlisberger, which may have been my favorite sports moment of the week, if not month. For those who missed it, the Saints are playing the Steelers this weekend. And one of the reporters mentioned something about, you're going up against this really tough team and this and that, and a Hall of Fame quarterback. And Cameron Jordan acted as if someone had just handed him a completely rotten hamburger.
Or said that the sun rises in the west.
Yeah, this is not an absolute. Like, I was going to use an analogy about cornflakes or Cheerios, but I didn't feel like that was appropriate. The Cameron Jordan, like, got the face. Like, the are you serious face. And I can't wait until Cameron Jordan retires, because he's going to be the best analyst on TV, hands down. Went to school at Cal Berkeley. Very good football player for the Saints as well for a long time. But his comment was, he's not one of the top five playing in the NFL right now. You can't say that he's a Hall of Famer. And in going through the names, it's hard to argue with. It's hard to argue. He's saying, and it's, again, hard to argue with it, this has been a really quarterback-friendly era, and it has. Rules changes. It's hard to play defense really at all without getting called for pass interference. You're still getting hit if you're playing quarterback, but you have opportunities to play in more games and not get your head taken off like it was back in the day, even back in the day 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's true. And the statistics are up, and there's all of a sudden all kinds of quarterbacks were putting up big numbers, and I think that's what he was getting at. But
yep. It
was a really fun interaction he had with that reporter. It was definitely worth a view. He really turned the tables on the reporter, and he started interviewing the reporter.
It was brilliant.
And it was just this genuine back and forth that you don't really see with athletes very often.
Yeah, it was okay, so who? And it, Drew?
Yeah.
Like, and I love his first guy is his guy.
Drew Brees, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because he was putting the reporter on the spot to name his top five.
Yeah, Drew, Tom.
And Cameron.
Aaron.
Immediately put Drew Brees at the top of the list. Smart move.
Yeah. But I love that he did that. And Tom, of course, that's obvious. Aaron, which Aaron Rodgers, if you've never in Hanson had not seen the Key and Peele substitute teacher skit, that's worth 5 minutes of your time on YouTube. You will laugh. And then he says Philip Rivers. Well, Rivers is really, he's been around. He was in that same quarterback class with Eli Manning. And he's one that's hard to ignore, because a lot of what he's done without a supporting cast, save for Antonio Gates.
Yeah, he's put up gaudy numbers, but he hasn't had the success in the postseason that Ben Roethlisberger has had, and that's what the reporter kept going back to, Super Bowl success.
Right. Super Bowl success, but then Cameron Jordan throws out, but Eli? Which, I enjoyed that. Like, to me, Eli Manning is not a Hall of Famer, but it's hard to argue. And then he says, Peyton? The guy says, well, no, this era. Peyton's only been retired 2 years. That's this era. So.
And then let's not forget about guys like Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck.
Yep. There was, suffice it to say, there was a lot of smirking and eye rolling, and it was just a glorious couple minutes of television.
Yes, it was.
And it made me so happy this morning. So, because he was ready. He was loaded for bear. It was a complete throwaway comment, and he just jumped right on it.
Yes,
so,
he did.
All right. We're done. So I wanted to take a moment, thank our guests for today, Sue Thomas and Mark Elmendorf of the Bedford High basketball program. They weren't on together. They were on separate. As well as the crew here at Bedford 105.1, Harry, Colleen, Bill, and Chris. Thank you, as always, for letting us into the studio and record a show. Happy holidays, and thank you to all of us for allowing us to pollute your airwaves for an hour or two or more every week. And I think we'll be back next week.
See you next week.
Probably record a show.
Happy
See you next
holidays.
Week. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. And whatever it might be for you, you've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.